Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite teams here on The Fan.
All right, 205, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. For those of you who are just tuning in, where you been? It's a Friday midnight ride. I've been on for 2 hours. Let's go. 888-808-1019. Especially you Met fans off of the best win of the year, maybe. Certainly one of the better ones. One that hopefully is season-changing, at least momentum-changing, after what we saw last night, an incredible night at the ballpark, marred by a devastating injury to Griffin Canning. He goes down in a heap with an obvious Achilles injury, and unfortunately, we all know it too well. We have seen it. We know what it looks like. You knew exactly, the minute you saw the replay, you knew exactly what it was. As he goes down with a torn Achilles, he's out, for the rest of the year. Maybe more than that. It's the third inning of a 0-0 game, and the air is sucked out of the building. The air is sucked out of the team. Knowing that, their friend, their teammate, their guy who, has been helping this team win, having an incredible season. And then personally, because they all know what it feels like, he's on his way to making some money, earning himself a contract. He's having a real bounce back year, the first real good year of his career. He's come here, he's helped them, and he's doing good for himself. And he's, maybe on his way to making some money, whether with the Mets or somebody else. And to see that devastating injury, that impacts you as a player and a teammate. And they have lost 5 out of 6 to the Atlanta Braves. They just lose their starting pitcher in the third inning. They turn to Warren at the end. They turn to Austin Warren, a guy they just called up, pitched a little bit earlier in the year. They turn to Warren in that spot, and he gives them 2-plus innings of real solid baseball and keeps it close. And the Mets offense comes through, sacrifice fly, big hit from Pete, 2-run single from McNeil, who really kind of bookended these two games that have kind of changed the momentum of the Mets season. It starts with that incredible catch in center field on Wednesday night that keeps a game scoreless instead of being 2-0 Atlanta, which would have felt like a lot more than that coming off the two first losses of this series. Nunez comes in and follows Warren and does an incredible job. His best outing in the last year, maybe. And this Met team comes away with a win that they were in desperate need of. They rally off a devastating injury. They get incredible performances from unlikely sources in Warren and Nunez. And they head into a Pittsburgh series tonight looking to really build some momentum off of one of those wins that you will turn back to if this season goes the way they want it to, as a night that really helped end this bad stretch of baseball. And that's really what it feels like. Now, they have to go take it into Pittsburgh, but it kind of feels like last night, salvaging the last two games of this 4-game set against Atlanta, winning these last two games, having Philly be swept and only score 1 run in a 3-game series out in Houston, retaking the lead in the division only by a half game, but still, as you wake up this morning or go to bed last night or whatever you're doing right now at 2:08 or staying up on this, Thursday night into Friday morning, you find yourself in first place in the division despite how bad it is, despite how bad they've played, despite losing 9 of 10. You've won these last two games. You've stabilized it a little bit. You got Montas come back, and now you've lost Griffin Canning, but you had Montas come back, had a good start. The offense is doing just enough. And you move on to Pittsburgh to play a lousy Pirates team that hopefully now you can win 2 or 3 games and feel like you're cooking again. And yeah, you're waiting for Sean Manaea to come back. He threw today, apparently, and felt great. Or yesterday, through Thursday, felt really good. Hopefully he's one more, rehab start away from rejoining the rotation. You can look to add the rotation at the deadline, but that was a win last night that the Mets were in desperate need of. And their guys came through. Pete Alonso came through. McNeil came through. And then some of the other unsung guys in this organization. And Austin Warren just coming up, called up yesterday from the minor leagues, steps in, gives you a big performance. Nunez, who really hasn't thrown the ball well all year for the Mets, comes through in a big spot. And they get a big win that hopefully has put an end to this stretch of really just hideous baseball that we've seen from the Mets. 888 888- 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Jeff in Fairview. What's up, Jeff?
What's up, Eddie?
What's going on, pal? How are you?
So happy, yes. This is a big win. This is a real win. Two in a row, getting these guys, you know, to get the split. Now, I'm so happy what Steve Cohen did, because the Braves been doing it to the Mets for years. Last game of the series, usually the Mets have a day game at Mets, and Atlanta, you know, catch their plane. Not tonight. Because the Braves do that all the time. When we're in Atlanta, we have a night game when we have to travel. Finally, Steve Cohen woke up. I'm telling you.
No, Fleeg's on the other side. He's a Mets fan. He says you're 100% right. That always happens in Atlanta. You never get the benefit of a day game to go travel. They make you play the night game.
Well, hopefully we keep doing that, you know. You know, now we gave them a taste of their own medicine. And it worked, because a lot of those up there, I'm not taking nothing away from the Mets pitchers. The Braves, you know, had early at bats, you know, swinging early. They wanted to get out of there, I'm telling you. It helped to win that game.
Yeah.
Now, you know what I'm saying?
Of course. No, it's a huge win.
Yeah. It is. It really, and the pitching. Vientos, you better come back. You better hit.
Yeah, he's a huge piece, and thank you for the call, Jeff. We haven't talked enough about Vientos. Vientos last year was a huge part of this offense. Like, there are the last two times the Mets had real good runs into the postseason, to me, there felt like there was one guy who changed the feeling of the team and made them different. Now, obviously, last year, Lindor was incredible, MVP caliber. No doubt. And that was as big a thing for carrying the team. But Vientos, his emergence made them different. His emergence made them more legit. And I feel like in 2015, it was Noah Syndergaard. In 2015, they make the trade for Cespedes, and he's great. No doubt. Made a huge impact. Obviously, everything, you know, DeGrom, you know, in the playoffs, you know, the net negative comes through. And Daniel Murphy. There's a lot of reasons why the Mets went to the World Series. But to me, it felt like that rotation became something different when Noah Syndergaard, out of really nowhere, started throwing 99 miles an hour and really fortified that rotation. And in similar fashion, last year, you know, Vientos comes really out of nowhere. I know we'd seen him before and he had shown power. But again, I know that I bring up this story a lot. And, you know, I filled in for Sal the day they signed J.D. Martinez. I was with BT filling in for Sal. Sal was moving. And Sal called up and was all happy. And part of it was, I'll see you back to the minors, Vientos, you bum. Like, that's how, you know, it was. He can't be the DH to start the year. He can't be the guy in the middle. That's not good enough. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. And then he comes up and has this incredible year into the postseason, through the postseason. I really feel like Vientos changed who they were and what they're capable of. And so right now, despite having a terrible like first couple weeks of the season, he started to turn it on a little bit, started to hit some home runs. Now he's been down with injury. As he comes back, you look to him to really make a difference in this lineup. And I think when you look at the numbers that the other guys have put forth, like even the numbers Beatty, who had a moment there in a stretch and clearly is much better defensively than Vientos, but to me, he's not giving you enough where I'm not doing anything other than bringing up Vientos and putting him at third base every single day or at DH. Like, he's playing every day. If he's up to it, you know how it is when they ease these guys back from injury. So maybe not right away. In the first week, he might miss two of the first seven games that he's back for or whatever. But for the most part, like, once he's up to it, Vientos plays every day. Because I don't know if Beatty is capable of what Vientos is capable of offensively. I don't know. Maybe he is. But I know what Vientos is capable of. I've seen how Vientos can carry this team. He is a huge part of getting this offense back on track. It is a must that he comes back and performs. And to me, I'm giving him every stinking at bat. He is my third baseman. Beatty just hasn't done enough. It's been a long enough stretch. I'm not getting rid of him. I'm not never playing him. I'm not sending him to the minors. I'm not trading him at the deadline. I'm not giving up on Beatty. But it's been long enough where I haven't seen what I've seen from Vientos. So I'm giving Vientos a long run to figure it out. He's coming back from injury. It might take some time. I'm playing him every day, and I'm hoping I get last year's Vientos because they're in desperate need of it. If the offense was clicking, I might feel different and say, hey, Beatty's better at third base, better defensively. You know, we can kind of platoon them a little bit, do, you know, not a straight platoon because Beatty would get most of the at-bats, like, but, you know, figure it out. Rotate, work on it, make sure I get better defense out there. But the offense isn't playing well. The offense is struggling. And right now, with the state of the pitching, I don't know how many runs I'm going to have to score. Vientos is going to be a huge part of this offense. Tommy in Astoria. What's up, Tommy?
Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I was at the game tonight.
Nice.
Just to, before I make my pitching point, I want to just defend Evan for a second. You know, mm-hmm. I just put on his goofy bucket hat, and if you fold it the right way, it actually does work as a fedora. It doesn't look that bad. You just got to fold the sides and the front the right way.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think, like I said before, I don't know if there's another article of clothing or any accessory ever more perfectly built for a person. Like, Evan and that hat, they've been together their entire lives. They just didn't know it yet. Like, they finally met each other. It's serendipity that him and that bucket hat have now come together.
He started a new trend. Everybody's going to be walking around City Field. I'm going to wear it. Like,
with the bucket hat with it down in the front, up in the back. Yeah.
But just a quick question, just a quick statement I want to tell. I mean, if you're a Boone show, then I'm a Mendoza show.
Okay.
Did you see how my clueless manager pieced together seven innings tonight with a bullpen on fumes and not a peep? Not an ilk of giving this guy any credit? How about that?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Yeah, no, I mean, well, listen, because the haters would tell you, well, he had no choice. Yeah. He had to go to war, and he had no choice. He had to go to war.
And take him out at the right time and bring in Nunez and take him out. So I want to go on record as saying Mendy won that game for us tonight because I hear enough Mendy blew that game.
Yep.
So Thomas Lestari is going on record as saying Mendy won that game for us tonight.
100%. Players.
Like he does a lot of games.
100%. And Mendo, I'm surprised. And you know what? Maybe I'm too wrapped up in the Yankee Twitterverse and hearing all the Boone complaints. I didn't know that Mendy was getting as many complaints. I had a conversation with Evan about the Rico. He says every email he gets is blaming Mendoza.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's clueless. They're calling for him to get fired over this stretch. I mean, seriously.
That's insane.
These people, they're nuts. But, you know, listen, we're going to have to just put Tidwell in the rotation and ride this out until really the trading deadline, even after the break. We have a tough stretch of games. You know, it's funny. I'm looking at the schedule coming up. And Milwaukee, they're playing Milwaukee. Milwaukee's got Peralta, Quintana, and that new kid, Mizorowski. It's very early, but we could be looking at a Subway Series where we're putting Blackburn and Montas up there against Reed and Rodon. So,
I haven't done the counting out. Is it going to be Blackburn and?
If you guys keep the rotation the way it is, you definitely got Reed and Rodon going. And, yeah, unless we change it around, and I don't think they will, just because Milwaukee's a red-hot team, and they're putting out some good. And listen, even Pittsburgh, this guy Telepoint pitches good against the Mets, and Brady Falter. I mean, and Pittsburgh's been playing a lot better. Like, they're playing like 500 balls since that new manager came on board. So this is a tough stretch of games coming up. We just have to ride this out to the trading deadline. Stay in this. Stay close to Philly. Philly has a tough schedule the rest of the month. And you know what? And just to make one more statement, there's been a lot of calls this week about how the Mets have no, you know what, the things underneath your belt and all. And it's so ridiculous. And pointed out how they're 2-5 against Atlanta. One of the people points out that they're 15-8 against Philly, the Cubs, the Dodgers, and the Cardinals. How come we don't look at those numbers?
Because they're positive and they don't matter. It's unbelievable how we look at our baseball teams. It truly is. It's unbelievable.
That's why I'm a big fan of yours, because you're rational and you make sense.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Yeah, no, listen, we don't value the positive. Like I had a call the other day, pretty much intimating that, you know, these games that they're struggling in June, like when you mentioned they went to the World Series last year, it's like this is the same crap we saw last year. There's the same June swoon. And then I'll go, well, I mean, yeah, I understand. Well, last year they went to the World Series, though. Oh, yeah, well, they cakewalked through the lousy American League Central. I'm like, okay. So the ALDS and the ALCS don't mean anything But the games in June against the Cincinnati Reds tell you all you need to know. Like, how could you possibly have that view? How could you look at these games just because they lost them? How could you look at these games right now and tell me they're more important than the ALDS because it was the Kansas City Royals and that's an easy game? Are you going crazy?
And I'll tell you something else. After looking at like what Houston did to Philly, I got news for you. I think the American League is not that. I think it's pretty. It's going to be pretty easy.
It is much better than people think. Yeah. There's no doubt. Thank you for the call, Tommy. It's the top echelon teams, especially because the Dodgers do what they do. And listen, right now, I think there are American League teams and American League fans who want to defend the American League saying, well, are we going to consider the Mets one of these great teams? They just lost 9 out of 10. Philadelphia just got swept. Philadelphia went into Toronto and got swept, has now gone into Houston and got swept. The idea that the American League is a pushover, I don't agree with. I do think you could make an argument that the top teams are better in the National League. I think that's fair. They lost this. I think they got swept. I think they played Toronto twice, and it was a sweep each way. Lost 2 out of 3 to Toronto. Okay. So they lost 2 out of 3 to Toronto. I knew they swept them. I thought they got swept as well by Toronto, but they lost 2 out of 3 to Toronto. But they just got swept by Houston, who's pitching great. Brown's having an incredible year. They're having a resurgence here. They have passed the Yankees in the standings for the second best record in the American League right now. They're a dangerous team. They have a track record. I know it's a different team, different manager, but they have a track record of being extremely successful in the postseason, winning that division a lot. Clearly the Tigers are the first team to win 50 games this year. They're a top level team. I still think the Yankees belong in the conversation of top-level teams. I think the idea that the American League is a joke is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The idea it's a minor league situation, the National League so much better, I don't agree. The top of the National League, the Dodgers, the Padres, the Mets, like you can go 5 deep in the National League where you can't go 5 deep in the American League. That's fair. But the idea it's a joke. The middle teams are the same. The Kansas City Royals are far worse than the St. Louis Cardinals. The Cleveland Guardians are worse than the Cardinals or, you know, the Phillies. Are they? I don't know. Where are the Phillies right now? The Phillies had the same stretch the Mets just had 3 weeks ago of losing 9 out of 10. They've scored 1 run in the last 3 games. Now, Harper's hurt. You got to wait for Harper to come back. But, yeah, the idea that the American League is a joke and a pushover and it's a, you know, I disagree. It's not as top heavy. But right now, Yankees got to get wins no matter who they're playing. And they take on a 3-game series starting tonight at Citi Field, at Yankee Stadium. I will be there for firework night. First time I'm taking the kids to the ballpark all year. Looking forward to it, but it's got to start now. They got to start playing better. Hopefully, that last game in Cincinnati woke them up a little bit. They're playing a lousy A's team that's really fallen apart here over the last couple weeks, and they got to go out there and hit this pitching. That I think it's all three. Let me see if I can. I think it's all three. No, I'm clicking on tickets. I don't want tickets. I want the pitching matchups. Is it that hard? I believe all three starting pitchers for the A's are going to be former Yankees. Yep, you got. Hold on. They've got Spence tonight, who I believe is part of the trade. I think he was a former Yankee. Then on Saturday, you got Sears, former Yankee. Sunday, Severino. I believe he played for the Yankees as well. So I think it's all three former Yankees pitching against the Yankees in this series. It's going to be. We don't know who's pitching for the Yankees just yet on Sunday, but tonight it's going to be Spence versus Warren. Saturday you're looking at Sears versus Schmidt, coming off an incredible couple of games here. They pushed him back a day because he's having a little bit of a tough time finding it again, which, again, ends the conversation. I saw Marash. I'm going to have to just have it out with Marash one of these days because I disagree with all of his baseball takes. And when they announced that Clark Schmidt, because of the amount of innings he's pitched the last 2 games, was having trouble recovering and they're going to push him back a day, and instead of pitching tonight, he's going to pitch on Saturday, instead of being rational and saying, well, maybe I guess I was wrong. He shouldn't have pitched the no. You know, you can't ask him to do too much. He's or this bothered him already. You're going to make him do more than 100. Maybe I should, you know, rethink it. No, he doubles down on it. And I knew this was going to be the take from anybody who hates baseball today and say, well, this is exactly why. Because if he tends to get hurt anyway, at least give him an opportunity to have his moment if he's going to constantly be an injured pitcher. Like, it's idiotic. It's idiotic. And I heard Keith talking about it too, and I know we have this conversation, you know, since Carlos Rodon only threw 88 pitches and, oh, it's hot. What are you kidding me? Go out there. Nolan Ryan threw this and Nolan Ryan threw that. Yeah. And David Cone threw 140 pitches in Seattle and then had an aneurysm in his arm the next year. And Carlos, you know, Mets will tell you, Santana threw a no-hitter and then pretty much never pitched well again for the Mets ever again. And gave up, what, 5 home runs his next start against the Yankees and was never as good. Baseball's changing. It's not just that the starting pitchers are being babied. That's part of it. Here's the other issue. The bullpen arms are dynamic. That's the other thing. The bullpens are far different than they used to be. All of these guys come in throwing hard. All of these guys have good arms. And as a hitter, I don't care how good the starting pitcher is. Sometimes it's and not sometimes, almost all the time, it's easier to say, face the same pitcher 3-4 times as opposed to bringing in a lefty just designed to get you out with a sweeper throwing 99-mile-an-hour fastballs. I wish we could go back to the old days too when starting pitchers threw 160 pitches and everything else. But I'm sorry, to use that our feeling of missing the old school baseball when pitchers threw 150 pitches and men were men and women were glad to have them, to quote the great Steve Summers, who would say that all the time. Because we miss those days, we're gonna turn on Carlos Rodon. And say that Carlos Rodon is a baby. And that Carlos Rodon, when the Yankees needed him, said he was gassed and tired and couldn't go out there. Carlos Rodon is 8th in Major League Baseball in innings pitched. 5th in the American League. He has been great for the New York Yankees. He has pitched into the 7th inning almost every time it was warranted. He's constantly done that. He has been a workhorse for the New York Yankees. And one night in Cincinnati, he felt a little bit like he was done. The manager recognized it, brought in a reliever, and the reliever lost the game. So now we're mad at Carlos Rodon. It makes no sense. Sometimes they just lose. Sometimes the players on the field didn't accomplish what they were meant to accomplish. Sometimes the other team is better than you in the biggest of moments in the game. We don't have to search for a reason why they lost. We don't have to turn over every stone. We don't have to come up with manufactured arguments. We don't have to get on Carlos Rodon, who's done everything for the Yankees this year, earned every cent he's been paid, had a great year, is pitching a ton of innings, going into the 7th inning constantly, been a real stabilizing force for this team. Borderline all-star. But we're going to get on him for one start because the bullpen guy who came in blew the game. There is one reason why the Yankees blew that game the other night, and his name is Jonathan Loaisiga. Not Carlos Rodon, not Aaron Boone, not Brian Cashman, not Hal Steinbrenner, not Matt Blake, not anybody else. Jonathan Loaisiga blew the game. It happens. It happens. We don't have to manufacture reasons because we're angry. The last caller, we were just talking about it. Met fans, Yankee fans, we do the same thing. We lost. Who's to blame? Sometimes it's just baseball, man. Sometimes it's just the guy didn't do his job. Sometimes it's the other team beat you. There's not always an underlying reason or some faulty thought process or someone letting them down. Sometimes you just lose. Every single loss We have to come up with the reason why. It's painfully obvious why they lost that game. The offense didn't come through when it had to later in the game. Judge strikes out, Judge pops up with the bases loaded with an opportunity to win the game, and Jonathan Loaisiga gave up 3 runs. That's why they lost. And to spin it that Carlos Rodon let them down is nonsense. I'm sorry. I don't know how you can view it that way. I don't know how you could look at Carlos Rodon and what he's done this year and say it's his fault for not going back out there and insisting and going to Aaron Boone and saying, no, I'm good. I've had a glass of water. I've caught my breath. Let's send me back out there. You only say that because they lost. If Jonathan Loaisiga throws a 1-2-3 inning, no one's complaining. We have to blame somebody. Why do we have to do that? What is it in us? What is it about us? What is it about the human experience and the human condition that we need to blame somebody? There's nobody to blame. The Reds had Jonathan Loaisiga's number. That's it. That's it. Sucks. Especially during a losing streak, it sucks. And if Carlos Rodon felt good to go and told Boone so, I would have expected Boone to go out there and throw him out there like he's done every other time that Carlos Rodon has felt good enough and deserved to go back out for the seventh. Every other time it's happened. Not one time this year has he been pulled early. He felt exhausted in the 95-degree heat in Cincinnati, and they needed Jonathan Loaisiga to pick him up. And he couldn't. That's why they lost. There really doesn't have to be a search expedition for the reason on why they lost. We don't need Amos and Andy to go find it for us. We don't need Jacques Cousteau to go looking for it. We don't need Colombo to ask one more thing. We don't need it. It's elementary, dear Watson. Jonathan Loaisiga blew the game. That's it. Drives me nuts.
Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 239. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. And, you know, there's a couple other narratives I want to get to, too. Just, you know, with the Yankees and why they're losing. We'll still take your Met calls. Did a lot on the Mets. Great win last night. Hopefully turn this into a big series in Pittsburgh and build a little momentum. The Griffin Canning injury is devastating, but the Mets get off the deck and score a ton of runs. Do a good job, get really good, score four, get the big hit from McNeil. Warren and Nunez come in and do the job. And this Met team manages to win the last two games of the series. But we're talking about why we feel we need to blame the Yankees and how they do things and their front office and Aaron Boone and everybody instead of just sometimes recognizing that you lose games. And look, the team isn't perfect by any stretch. They have faults. They're not perfect. They make mistakes. And they have, you know, over this stretch, have really started to make mental mistakes. Never mind. And listen, let's just be fair. Like, that's all I'm trying to be. Like, you want to know why I'm the Yankee Show? Because you're all unfair and I'm fair. That's why. You're all mad and overreact to being mad, and I just get mad and don't get crazy. That's really it. That's it. Like, if you watch that series against Cincinnati, who made more mental gaffes? Who made more base running mistakes? Who made more disastrous plays? Believe it or not, even though they won 2 out of 3, the Reds did. And they're led by Terry Francona. And the minute, if I say that, we'll go right to, well, Terry Francona's won championships. Okay. So that's really Boone's sin. Boone, it's that he hasn't won a championship yet. Because bad plays either reflect on the manager or they don't. The idea that Ellie De La Cruz didn't know that he was the winning run and that the runner on third was only tying the game and he almost ran off the base paths and blew their opportunity to win the game, that either reflects on the manager not making sure guys are focused or it doesn't. It doesn't matter that 100 years ago Terry Francona won a World Series with the Boston Red Sox. That doesn't matter. Either their bad play, their lapses in mental awareness, and their terrible base running, getting picked off second base with two outs in a rally, all the mental gaffes they made, it either reflects on Terry Francona or it doesn't. Pete Crow Armstrong, you know, Met fans know him very well, having an incredible year playing for the Cubs, doesn't realize how many outs there are, and a fly ball to center field scores a runner on second. He tags up from second and scores the run because Pete Crow Armstrong catches the ball and thinks the inning is over. That either reflects on Council as a manager or it doesn't. It's not like, well, Craig Counsell, he's not working, he doesn't have the payroll the Yankees have, although, you know, Chicago's pretty close. And he was a good manager in Milwaukee, so, you know, he's done a lot more than Boone has. That's not the conversation. The conversation is, do these mistakes that we see on the field, are they because of the manager or not? And when we see other teams do it, to dismiss it and say, well, I mean, it's not on Francona. He won a World Series in 2007. No, it's on Francona, or it's not. It's on Boone, or it's not. It's the same thing. It's a problem around baseball. You want to talk about pitch counts being a problem and the arbitrary number of 100 pitches? You want to talk about all the different ills of baseball? Put right there at the top, fundamentals are not as harped on throughout all of baseball. Throughout all of baseball. And we see bad base running at a clip that we have not seen before. Throughout all of baseball. We see the same thing, the exact same thing. Watch the Cincinnati game. I killed Aaron Boone, believe it or not, for taking a bunt off in extra innings in the game against LA, the Angels. I didn't understand it. It made no sense to me. I don't care what the count is. You decided to bunt. Terry Francona and the Cincinnati Reds did the exact same thing. The nine-hitter with first and second bunted. He bunted it foul. He swung at the next pitch. Terry Francona did the same thing, and the Reds didn't score. The same thing. But we don't care. And then we get other things that just make me laugh. Like, it's been talked about a lot over the last couple of years that it's the lineup, that constantly moving players around, constantly not keeping hitters in the same position in the lineup. Why doesn't he have the same lineup every day? I don't understand why he doesn't have the same lineup every day. Like, that's the reason the players are failing. Like, the mindset of hitting second or third is so dramatically different that they don't know what they're doing. That they don't, like, it's like Thibodeau is coaching the team. They don't have defined roles. Second or third, right? That's the way it's got to be. I don't understand. Because they lost games and the offense didn't perform, so we got to come up with a reason why that's the reason why the Yankees and or the Mets, because we hear this with the Mets too, and I'm finding out that Mendoza's getting a lot of flack. I have no idea why. Do you know that the New York Yankees in 1999 had more different lineups than last year's Yankee team? That we all screamed about the lineup change. 1999 New York Yankees, led by Joe Torre, won a championship. Had more different lineups than last year's Yankee team. Didn't seem to bother them. Do you know that, and this is from, I got this from Yankee Files. I'll give them a pop. Yankee Files, they do a good podcast. They promote themselves as the podcast for Yankee fans who actually like the Yankees. And believe it or not, there's far too little of them. But to get to the the idea that changing the team and this rotation of players they're going through now, which is going to make it even more so that they have different lineups. And we're screaming about it. We got to play this guy every day. Oh, he got a hit yesterday. He's got to play today. Blah, blah, blah. Do you know that Derek Jeter hit in three different lineup spots in the first three games of the 96 World Series? The Yankees ran out in that World Series. And then in 99, in the 1999 World Series, the Yankees had a different batting order and defensive alignment in each of the four games of the 99 World Series. So in the entire World Series, the 99 World Series, not a single lineup was the same. Not a single defensive alignment was the same. The defense was completely different in every game. The lineup was different in every game. In 2009, the Yankees only put the same defensive alignment on the field in back-to-back games of the World Series once. So out of the six games, they had five different lineups. Five different defensive alignments. The idea that the lineup has to be the same and that's why they're not performing is nonsense. It's made up. It's not accurate. It's just something we want to say. It's something we can point to. It gives us something else to yell about management about, because it can't just be the players. It's got to be what they're doing. It's got to be their fault. It's got to be something stupid that they're doing, because they traded for Josh Donaldson, so they make the lineup stupidly too. And we hear the same thing with the Mets as I'm listening to more Rico Bronyas and listening to the fan base get all over Mendoza. Mendoza has done an incredible job with this team. I don't know how anyone doesn't see that. They were 11 games under 500, and look what he did. He is a good young manager, and the Mets are lucky to have him. He's not always going to, like, not every pitcher he brings in is going to be successful. It's amazing to me how quick we are as a baseball collective fan base to blame management and the manager. Now, right now, Stearns is living a charmed life. The fan base isn't going to get on Stearns all that much. Maybe a little bit for the pitching department. We'll see. If it really falters here, that might change. If the pitching becomes a disaster, which I don't expect it to, but if the pitching really becomes a problem, maybe some of the fan base will be upset about not going out and getting quality arms in the offseason. Maybe. But certainly the owner and David Stearns, to an extent, kind of live in a charmed life. But apparently the manager is not feeling it. The manager is not under the same protection of the winning of last year. Because we think we can manage. We know we can't play, but we can manage. We can move things around. We can play chess. We can yell at a pitcher and tell him he has to go back out there. We can do all those things. We can get tough on players. We can criticize them in the media. Never mind the fact that whether it would be successful or not, or whether it helps or not, or whether, you know, the team absolutely adores the guy. As we played in the audio from Jazz Chisholm the other day. My skip. Loves his skipper. The best part about being a Yankee is that Aaron Boone's the skipper. But we don't care about that. All we care about is championships. And I get it. I get it. And he hasn't won one, so it's got to be his fault. And we forget. We clamor for Joe Girardi now. We forget. I was around. The fan base hated Joe Girardi too. He was Binder Joe. We forget it now because we think it's gotten worse. He was Binder Joe. He never went by his gut. He didn't criticize the players either. His bullpen management sucked. Time to get rid of Joe Girardi. He's terrible. I talked to the same. I'm telling you right now. I had the same conversations with the same. I wasn't hosting at the time, but I was defending Joe Girardi. And I didn't want Joe Girardi let go. I thought it was a terrible mistake. I was very upset after getting to Game 7 of the ALCS, letting go of Joe Girardi. I couldn't understand it. But in my mind, Boone's done a good job. They've won three divisions, been to three ALCSs, and a World Series appearance. And I really feel like they've only had the best team in the American League once. And you could put that at Cashman. I absolutely think Brian Cashman has much more to blame about the failings of the Yankees over the last, you know, 15 years than any of the managers. Joe Girardi or Aaron Boone. It's on Cashman. The players haven't performed. It's on them. It's on them. Aaron Judge hasn't performed. I can't tell you how many people in another year they're going to waste Judge's prime. Maybe. Maybe not. It would help if Judge performs in the postseason, no? And I've been a defender of his, and I'm not killing him for it, but we have to be honest. He hasn't performed in the postseason. If Judge had a hot streak in the World Series, maybe this thing is different. I remember in 2019, they traded for Edwin Encarnacion. Do you remember that? He was Nelson Cruz before Nelson Cruz. He was a guaranteed power hitter, incredible bat. He had his faults, but you knew what you were going to get from Edwin Encarnacion. They get him in 2019. He goes into the postseason and absolutely demolishes the Minnesota Twins. Goes berserk. And then he plays the Astros, and I swear, he looked like he didn't know how to hit. Of all the things that are hard to explain with everything that's happened with this team since 2009, Edwin Encarnacion having the ugliest at-bats you've ever seen in your life in the ALCS against the Astros is by far the toughest to explain. I have no idea how that happened. That's not Aaron Boone's fault. That's not Brian Cashman's fault. Edwin Encarnacion was terrible after killing it the second half of the season and killing it in the Twin Series. He went to Houston and couldn't freaking hit. Sometimes there's no rhyme or reason. The Yankees haven't performed well in the biggest of moments. And eventually that's going to cost Aaron Boone his job if he doesn't win. And of course, that's the case. To me, I don't think you should give him another contract unless this one comes with a World Series. That's fair. There is a timeline on it. But let's not blame him for everything. Can we just stop? 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. It's driving me crazy. It's literally driving me crazy. And the idea that Mendoza, now that this stretch has happened, is getting the same treatment and blamed for all this stuff is even more mind-numbing. At least the Yankees have a track record of not winning when they should win. They're the New York Yankees. This is the second year, and the first year he took them to the NLCS. They had the best record in baseball 3 weeks ago. They're still in first place in their division. And the manager's an idiot? Oh my God, I can't take it.